This time of year, everyone talks about going dry. But at Athletic Brewing Company, we're skipping that because we prefer going athletic, which isn't dry at all. From crisp Goldens to hoppy IPAs and limited releases in between, you'll find something that fits your style. Every single non-alcoholic brew is packed with flavor and the same craft experience you love. So yeah, you could call it dry, but there's really nothing dry about it. Find your new favorite near beer at athleticbrewing.com. Athletic Brewing Company, fit for all times.
Welcome back, everyone. It's another episode of Inside Boxing Live. We're presented by PPV.com. It's Dan Cadobio, it's Chris Algieri, and we have ourselves one heck of a show. Because it is probably the biggest Saturday of the boxing year. Fights around the schedule. Saturday night, Teofimo Lopez, Shakur Stevenson is the grand daddy of them all. We have Abbas Barao and Xander Zayas over in Puerto Rico. We have Josh Kelly taking on Murtazalayev, Bakram Murtazalayev at 154 pounds in the afternoon. We have our fight party at Jack Doyle's bar starting at 5 p.m. There's a lot going on, Chris. This is like the boxing world. It's nothing, and then everything all at once. But we love it because that's how we live.
I like how you say it's the biggest fight of fight weekend of the year. We're four weeks into the year. That's a good start. It's a good start. It's the end of January and we're getting a humongous weekend, which is going to be hard to rival for the rest of the year. So let's buckle up, baby. We're here.
I'm saying this might be the biggest fight weekend of the year. Like, we're setting the pace. We're setting the bar pretty high on this Saturday. Do I wish some of the fights were Friday? Do I wish some of the fights were next week? Yes. We have Zuffa on Sunday, which is going to help us like wean off of the fights. It's like,
we have Pro Box on Friday. We got Pro Box on Friday from Hanover, Maryland. So you got Friday, you got Saturday afternoon, you got Saturday night, you got Sunday. You're going to be, I'm going to need a week off next week. I'm going to.
It's a lot of boxing.
Like 3 days in a row.
A lot of boxing. But this is what we do. This is what we love. This episode is brought to you by PPV.com, as all episodes are, the leader in live streaming events, AEW wrestling, boxing, and more. No subscriptions. We're living in that subscription world. Not with PPV.com. We go fight by fight. You have live interactive chat. You stream it to all your devices. They send us the big fights. They help support this podcast so we can do it twice a week. So go follow them on socials and make sure you order fights with PPV.com. When those fights come around. Let's not waste any time because we have a lot of fights to break down. We have the ring card. We have the Zayas Barao fight. We have the Bakram fight. And we have some news and notes. But I want to start with the Teofimo Shakur fight. It's the biggest fight of the weekend. Teofimo and Shakur. It's a throwback prime versus prime fight. There's real stakes on the line in this fight, Chris. Real titles on the line. With a win, Shakur becomes a champion in his fourth weight class at just 28 years old. I believe this would be Teofimo's best win of his career. I think it's better than Lomachenko because he'd be figuring out the Shakur puzzle while he's in his prime. A fight that sets up the winner for the rest of their career. It's here, and I'm ready for it.
Love this fight. True fighter's fight. The boxing world will be tuned in to watch this fight. The hardcores will be tuned in. Fighters will be tuned in, tweeting. This is a big deal. This is a really big fight. I wish their profiles were as big as their skill sets, but they're not. I mean, they're big, sure, but these guys deserve to be like De La Hoya Trinidad type level. And that's how I look at this fight in terms of this matchup. You know, these guys going into this fight. I know Shakur is the betting favorite, but it's still a very, very competitive fight. And I just can't wait to lock in and watch these two operators do their thing.
They are operators. They're top operators. Is it lacking a little bit of sizzle? Yeah, but whatever. I think it's still going to sell out, which is a great indicator. I think it's going to be a raucous crowd inside MSG. I saw them face off at the Knick game. We're seeing some more face-offs. We're seeing Fight Week at the Ring Awards on Friday night. The buzz is going to get bigger and bigger as we get closer and closer. It's the first big fight of the year. But back to the points that I made in that little prepared statement that I made right there, my little hype paragraph there, is I believe that this
fight... Your hype sizzle.
My sizzle, yeah. I knew that's going to get clipped out and put on Instagram and we'll get millions of likes. But I truly believe that this fight is going to set up the winner for the rest of your career. If whoever emerges from this will be the guy. and potentially be the face of boxing, or could put themselves in that discussion and set themselves up for huge fights. For Shakur, does he want to go back down to 135? Does he want to go to 147 and try to tangle with Devin Haney and some of the guys there? With Teofimo, he wins this fight, he solidifies himself because it's been a rocky road for him since the Lomachenko fight. But do you agree that the winner of this is it kind of catapults themselves into another stratosphere?
To a degree, yes, and to a degree, no. This generation is, I'm going to say it, weird. This is a weird generation where clicks and social media profile and YouTube hits and cringe sells, and that's how you get into the outside market of the niche sport that is boxing. So I'm not sure if this is going to directly propel the winner right into that. But I will say this for each guy.
Boxing terms?
Yeah, listen, and I was going to get into that. Let's go with each guy. So Shakur wins this fight. I think he is in the driver's seat to get all those fights that he wanted, because he's been an unvoided guy. Let's be honest. He wants all the smoke. He needs the dance partners in order to get the acclaim that he believes he deserves, that I believe he deserves, that I think most boxing insiders believe he deserves. But he needs those fights. He's that guy, and I've said this on this show many times. He's the guy that you may not love the way that he fights. You may not be like running to the television to go watch his next fight. He is in his fourth weight class now. But if he beats your favorite fighter, continuously steps in and keeps beating your fighters, like Floyd did. Because Floyd wasn't the guy, like everyone was like, ah, I got to tune in to see Floyd at you know, after the Gotti fight at 47, like he was just undersized for those guys. And he just had to beat your favorite fighters. He beat Gotti. He beat De La Hoya. You know, you see him do that and you're like, all right, man, this is the guy. He beats all my favorite fighters, so I got to deal with him. And I got to watch him, and he becomes must-watch TV, whether you want to see him lose, you want to see him lose that O, or you want to see what he does against your favorite guy, beats Cotto, you know, beats Pacquiao finally, you know. And then for Teofimo, you're going to look at his track record, and you're going to be like, yo, he beat Lomachenko? I mean, I think he beat him better than anybody. I think it's the only real loss on Lomachenko's career was Teofimo Lopez. He beat Josh Taylor when Josh was at, you know, almost the height of his powers. And then he beats Prime Shakur. That's going to be really difficult to argue against for absolutely anyone. So, yeah, I think that the winner of this fight, yeah, their stratosphere changes. They hit the next level of you know, boxing stardom and potential to take over the face of the sport. I don't believe they become the face of the sport, because I think that's a really hard thing to do. But yes, I will agree. Stratospherically, both of these guys, either one wins, we're looking at a whole different tax bracket. We're looking at a whole different understanding of what the public sees from these guys.
You started that off with the cringe stuff, which is, I agree. Like I said, that's what a big part of boxing today, promotion, whatever you want to call it, social media, and all that. I will say this about Teofimo. He is locked in. Did not see much of him talking during this camp. Did not see any theatrics. I mean, fast forward, or rewind, I should say. So over the last year, he was easily the cringiest guy on social media in boxing. And that's saying a lot. I believe he is really locked in. And I believe he really wants this dub, because he could solidify a lot of things for himself in terms of money going forward, and also being the best. Like saying, I beat Shakur Stevenson, who no one really has come close. Like, who has come close to beating Shakur Stevenson? Zepeda had a few good rounds, and that's because I think Shakur was like almost backed into a corner and had to legit fight his way out and prove to everyone that it can be an entertaining fight. Like, who has come even remotely close to beating Shakur Stevenson in his career? And if Teofimo can do that, that's a freaking huge win. That's a way bigger win than the Lomachenko win.
Yeah, I agree. I this would be the biggest fight, the biggest win of Lomachenko, of Teofimo's career. And when you ask, like, oh, who has come close? No one's come close. It's come down to who did the best, or who made Shakur fight the worst. You know, like, I think a lot of people bring up the De Los Santos fight. It wasn't a close fight. De Los Santos, yeah, he was in the fight, and he made Shakur look less than great, but all the same time, I think that Shakur did a great job of disarming a very dangerous guy. And, you know, that's the level that we're talking about with Shakur. And that's what I was saying about before. It's like, he needs the dance partner so he can shut your guys off. I remember with Oscar Valdez, Oscar Valdez was the guy, you know, when Shakur completely dominated him, put him down, controlled him, shut him off. That's just the way that he fights. So, being able to beat that guy now, that's a huge, huge feather in the cap.
Let's go over the cap. Yeah, it is the cap for sure. Let's go over to Teofimo's last five fights. He's coming off of a unanimous decision win over Arnold Barboza. That was at Times Square. That was in May of last year. So pretty lengthy layoff for Teofimo. Would like to see him fight one more time this year, but he was, getting himself in fights, out of fights. He's going to fight Boots. He's going to try to fight Crawford. He's going to try to fight Haney. And then he gets arguably the toughest of them all in Shakur Stevenson. So he beats Barboza, a unanimous decision, probably the best performance of that night, and a win that is aging a little bit better than it did at the time. Steve Claggett, that was in June of 2024. That was like a Rock'em Sock'em Robots type of fight. The Jermaine Ortiz fight, that was a close competitive fight. He won that. That was in early 2024. Josh Taylor and Sandor Martin. He's fighting at 140 now. He's the ring champion there. He's got another belt there too. I believe it's a WBO belt. So that's Teofimo's last five fights. Some pretty good performances. The Taylor one comes to mind. The Jermaine Ortiz one comes to mind because he struggled a little bit with a mover in there. Not saying that Ortiz fights the same way as Shakur, but some good performances from Teofimo. We don't know what type of performance that he's going to show us on Saturday night.
If you're a Teofimo backer, the caveat, the good thing about when you mention those five fights, other than the Sandor Martin fight, because a lot of people argue he lost that fight and he really did not really impress, was obviously the Taylor fight. That's the shining moment of the last five. The Jermaine Ortiz fight. Jermaine is a tough guy. Very mm-hmm. tough style to deal with. He gave Lomachenko hell. He fought a very disengaging fight after he got hit. In that fight with Teofimo, he got hit with a good right hand and he started getting really lateral, getting his lateral movement, countering from the outside. Teofimo made good adjustments during that fight to pull it out of the fire. The Claggett fight, I called that fight. And Claggett is the kind of guy, he's a volume guy. Teofimo outpunched him. Teofimo threw more punches than him. He stayed in the pocket with a guy who was not in his level physically, not in his level skill-wise, but he fought him in his own game and he beat him. And there has been questions about Teofimo's gas tank and he threw a ton of punches that night. Give him that. He also won that fight running away. That was, I don't think anyone gave Plagg even a round in that fight. And then the Barboza fight, which, dude, I rate that fight. I rate that win. Barboza is a tough guy to beat. And Teofimo showed he was on a different level. Different level. I wish he stepped on the gas a little more and really separated himself even more. But in terms of, the scores and what he did with a very solid fighter, I think that was really impressive. That's also a guy, Barboza, who's calling out Teofimo for years. And then he finally gets it and has no answers. So you can peel those apart, both positive and negative. I think most people peel them back negative. I just gave you some positive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that fight is aging well because of how putrid the other performances were on that specific card. And just there wasn't
that. It aged well that night.
Aged well that night. And it did age well that night. And it aged well for the rest of the year. Teofimo throws about 48 punches around. That's a little bit below the weight class average. No, that's not below the weight class average. At 140, I want to say it's just below, lands about 42% of his power shots. So Teofimo is, it's a lot. So anything over 40, you're considered, that's like shooting 40% from three in the NBA. It's a very good number. The junior middleweight average, or junior, 56 punches around. So Teofimo is just below the weight class average for punches thrown. He's not the most active fighter in terms of volume, but he's very accurate and he's got a lot of power. Not so much at 140. So I'll ask you right now, how does Teofimo solve Shakur?
So Teofimo is extremely athletic, an explosive athlete, but he also has high boxing IQ. And we've seen that on display. We saw the Lomachenko fight. He's fought a very disciplined, smart fight in that fight. And then when he needed to, he used athleticism in the 12th round to close the show and get the victory. Dealing with him's tough because he throws some punch especially when he gets in his rhythm, like we saw in the Taylor fight, and he's throwing punches from these crazy angles from southpaw, back foot, firing off, exploding. He closes the distance extremely fast. You mentioned the power. He's not a one punch puncher anymore like he was at 35, but he's still a good puncher at 40. He gets a lot of respect when he cracks guys. We saw that in the Jermaine Ortiz fight. We saw that in the Barboza fight. So he has respectable power at world-class level, even at 140. So you got a guy with explosive athleticism who throws punches from weird angles when he gets his rhythm. He has a boxing IQ and can be very disciplined. He is a bit I'm not going to say a bit. He actually is a southpaw destroyer. His biggest wins, if you really look at it, Taylor, southpaw, Lomachenko, southpaw. Magdaleno, which is one of the most violent, destructive. Oh, it was violent. And that was a step up fight at the time. Yes, he was supposed to win, but was he supposed to absolutely destroy the guy? No. He's got a thing about southpaws. Now, on top of that, Lomachenko was calling him out way in advance. When people were like, dude, you're not ready for this fight. Even when the fight was happening, like, it's too soon. Guess what? It wasn't. He calls out Taylor. I'm going to go up and wait in my fight, Josh Taylor. Everybody's like, all right, slow down, buddy. Slow down. Goes up there, beats Taylor, puts that on. Calls out Boots Ennis, another southpaw. Calls out Terrence Crawford, who fights a lot out of the southpaw fans, especially recently. Now he's got Shakur Stevens. He got another southpaw. Guy's got a thing for southpaws, whether it's because he's got a good popping right hand or he's got that explosive left hook that he gets that nice little whip on, like we saw in the Magdaleno fight, where the right hands to the body. His ability to use a jab with a southpaw. So there's things there if you're backing Tio where you can see a path to victory.
How does he do it, though? I mean, that's what I'm trying to figure out. I mean, that's what a lot of fight fans are trying to figure out. How does Teofimo beat Shakur? Because he's not a pressure fighter, Shakur's he's not a pressure fighter, Teofimo. He is a counterpuncher. It's a big reason why I said originally when this fight was announced, I don't think it's going to be a thriller because neither guy is really a come-forward type of fighter. The thing that Teofimo has is he's a little more dynamic than Shakur Stevenson on offense. He can disrupt Shakur Stevenson. I'm very curious to see, will Teofimo be the guy moving forward? Will Teofimo be the guy applying pressure, quote-unquote, bringing the fight to Shakur? Because he has to win these rounds somehow. If he sits back, I believe Shakur can pick him off with the jab and movement, and we'll get to Shakur in a second how he's going to win. But can Teofimo do that? Will he do that in this fight? Can he successfully apply enough pressure to steal some of these what I believe are going to be close rounds?
He has no choice. And I go back to my own career when I was when I was about to fight Amir Khan coming off the Manny Pacquiao fight. And I was known as a quote unquote pure boxer. And there was no chance I was beating Amir Khan if we just boxed on the outside. I had to go forward. And I showed people I could fight off the front foot. Can Teofimo do that with a master of distance, a guy who controls and manipulates range as well as Shakur Stevenson? He really has no choice. That's really what we got to see. The good thing is that for Teofimo, he has a good jab against a southpaw, and he uses it well as a nice range finder. He'll jab that front shoulder. He'll keep that front hand busy. He can explode in with shots. He's going to have to connect. He's going to have to make Shakur feel the danger of his punches. I saw that Lomachenko fight. I was in the room. It was in the bubble. Tio is throwing these shots, and they looked heavy, hard, and dangerous. And Lomachenko went, I'm going to take my time until I'm ready to engage with this guy. I got to cover up. And he did that for 6 damn rounds in a row. And it was like, what is Lomachenko doing? And then he started to see Tio start to open up a little bit, started to gas a little bit. And then Lomachenko started taking over, was busting up 7, 8, 9, 10. And then again, like I said, Tio comes back around 12 and closes the show with a 7-5 victory. So he has the IQ. He has the power. He has the dangerous combination, counterpunching, to get a counterpuncher to think twice, which is what we saw Shakur do against De Los Santos. He had a dangerous counterpuncher and said, let me not engage too much. So there's going to be ways for Teofimo to steal rounds if he gets Shakur to think twice about those counters because of the danger that's coming his way. If he just sits on the outside and tries to go jab for jab, he's going to lose because of the distance control that Shakur has. But if he can force the issue, punch the shoulder, punch the bicep, hit the hip, hit the shoulder, make it physical, explode in, push him over, make him uncomfortable, make Shakur think in chaos. That's when Tio's going to have his best shot. Because in chaos, he makes good decisions, does Teofimo. But getting a master of range and a guy who stays super calm to feel chaotic, very difficult to do.
That, number one, yeah, very difficult to rattle Shakur. And I when I think of Teofimo, I don't think of chaos. I don't think of a chaotic fighter. I think of a counterpuncher. I think of an explosive counterpuncher at 135. That's another thing too. At 140, he has not shown that same power. He's not shown that same, athleticism. There's something different with him at 140. Still very good at 140. but I just haven't seen the power. I think we all can see that. That's just not there yet, or not there at all for Teofimo at 140. So that remains to be seen. I'm very curious the game plan that Teofimo has in store for Shakur, because pressure didn't work with Cepeda. Sitting back at range is not going to work because Shakur will just pick you off because he's unbelievable at distance control. So what does this guy do? What does he have up his sleeve? That's what makes this fight super intriguing. And that's going to be the interesting part for our guy Teofimo. Over to Shakur Stevenson. His last five fights, obviously the Zepeda win, which I believe was one of his best wins. Josh Padley stopped him in 9 rounds. Artem Hartludian, I just destroyed that name. Decision. Emma De Los Santos, we talked about that, did not look good in that fight back in 2023, but got the win. Yoshino in April of 2023, a stoppage there. For Shakur, we know how brilliant he is on defense. We know how surgically is with his jab and on offense, but I do have some concerns about Shakur. Hands. How are those hands going to hold up over the course of 12 rounds? It's always a problem with Shakur Stevenson. Number two, he's moving up to 140 pounds. First time at 140 in his career. He is a bigger guy, but he's going a little bit out of his comfort zone to get the mega fight that he always wanted. The other stuff we're fine with. Like, he's going to be special defensively. The dude can jab your face off, and he's got enough power to keep you honest. It's those first two things, the hands and fighting at 140 for the first time, that make this intriguing fight, make this intriguing as well.
Well, yeah, you got to think. He's never fought someone this big who's fast, because Teofimo is fast. He's got fast hands and fast feet, and he's got pop. So you got a guy who's the biggest guy I've ever fought. He's got speed and power. He's got heavy hands, so you got a lot to deal with there. And as you said, if the hands are an issue, this fight's a really difficult fight for Shakur. If you can't keep Teofimo off you or at bay with a guy who is as dynamic as he is,
like
and hard
fifth,
to
sixth
get
round,
a read on.
Shakur's doing this, like yeah. Shakur hasn't thrown his right in two rounds.
He hasn't thrown the counter left. You see him rolling it. Yeah,
right or left hand.
I hate to think about that going into a fight, but yeah, with Shakur, you kind of have to think that. But I don't know how high of a contact fight this is going to be. So that was one of my concerns with the Zepeda fight, because I'm like, Zepeda's going to make you fight, and you're going to have to hit him. I think if Shakur had hand problems in that fight, you know, he could have had a lot of trouble, because Zepeda just pours it on like the ocean. But with Tio, it's a little bit different. I don't know how much of a high contact fight this is going to be. I think it's going to be a lot of chess, a lot of back and forth, and in which case it's going to really favor Shakur. And Teofimo is going to have not necessarily a puncher's chance, but he's going to have like an explosive athletic catch and then build. One thing I will say about Teofimo too, though, he's the kind of guy that even though at 40, he doesn't have the one punch power. If he hits you and gets you to think or buzzes you, he really builds momentum. He gets on a rhythm.
Yeah.
He fights like a ball rolling downhill. Yeah, he grows. When he finds a rhythm and he finds that spot, he takes it. And so if he's able to catch Shakur, even though as defensively sound as he is, Shakur does get hit at times, even though I think you're going to numbers guys probably got the best plus minus in the game today.
Oh, he does.
But if he does get hit and gets even a little bit buzzed, or if Teofimo thinks he gets buzzed, he can really build momentum pretty quickly based on his athleticism and ability to change speeds. But yeah, the hands thing is something to think about. But again, I can't bank on that before a fight. If it happens during, that's a whole nother thing to think about. Hopefully Shakur is coming into this fight at as close to 100% as you can, because no fighter does, especially with the hands. So we can see a great fight and both guys at their best. We don't have any excuses for why somebody won or didn't. But yeah, man, I love this fight. The more we talk about it, the more I love it.
Well, I bring up the hands because like Shakur is so damn good that we know what he's going to do in there for the most part. We've seen this guy time and time again with these brilliant performances, defensive virtuoso, defensively lands 47% of his power shots, lands 25% of his jabs. Like, we know what we're getting. So I'm thinking of the things that can go wrong for Shakur. I know that's not the best way to think. You're a fighter. You want everything to go smooth heading in. I'm looking at ways, like, how does this go awry for Shakur? Like, how do things... some adversity here. Like, he has shaky hands and he's fighting at a whole new weight class. That's the intriguing part of this fight, on top of it being, you know, two guys in their absolute primes. I brought up the numbers. Shakur throws around 40 punches around. That's 16 below the weight class average at 140. We know that he's not the most active guy, but he lands, man. 47% of his power shots. He lands 40% of his overall shots. And here's the number. He keeps his opponents at 17% of their landed punches. That's a plus 20.2 plus minus ranking, which is number one in all of boxing. There's only a certain amount of guys that have gone over 20. Where I think it's Shakur. I mean, it's Lomachenko. Andre Ward and Floyd Mayweather, I believe, the only guys to get over 20, plus 20 on the plus class. Minus. Damn good class to be in. So this guy has mastered the art of hitting and not getting hit. Let's go over to the odds. Very interesting odds here. Shakur Stevenson is minus 330. Teofimo Lopez, for the third time in his career, is an underdog at plus 250. He was the underdog against Josh Taylor. And he was the underdog against Vasily Lomachenko. Slight underdog against Taylor. He was a way bigger underdog against Lomachenko at the time, and he was still considered a pup and put him on the scene. Over-under is 10.5 rounds. I think this goes over. Teofimo by decision is plus 450, which a lot of people are taking a hard look at here because that's a juicy, juicy number. Shakur by KO, plus 700. That's not happening. Shakur by decision. Minus 210. So some interesting numbers here on the betting scale. So Shakur is the favorite. Teofimo, one of the more live dogs we've seen in a while.
That is a very enticing plus 450. If you're a backer of Teofimo Lopez, there's going to be some late money on that just because of that number. It becomes a worthy risk. Yikes. Plus 450 for a decision.
Right, he's not knocking him out. So, like, you might as well just not even look at the plus 750 for the knockout. That's a waste of a bet.
Nobody's getting knocked out in this fight. This is going the distance. It's a tough fight to bet on. But for those of you who are backing Teofimo Lopez, man, that's a juicy number, 450 plus.
And a lot of people got it early too because it's starting to more money starting to pour in on Teofimo.
Yeah, I've seen that. Over the last couple of weeks,
I expect that number to get even bigger because people look at Shakur and they're just like, oh, he's like I said, like his hands are brittle, like he's never been tested. You know, he's going up in a new weight class. Teofimo's a little more flashier. We've seen those highlight reel knockouts from Teofimo, albeit at 135 pounds. Because does he have a stoppage at 140? Teofimo?
Yeah, he stopped the first Campa.
Campa. That was 4 years ago.
Yeah.
3.5 years ago.
I called that fight too. But I was watching that fight and I was like, power's not the same. Because the shots that he was landing on Campa, I was like, these are the shots that would be highlight reel knockouts for at 35. And then at 40, it took a bunch of rounds for him to break him down.
But even Shakur at minus 210 for a decision is a pretty nice number.
Yeah,
I usually don't bet minus money because obviously you got to throw down more.
That's not fun either.
I know. I mean, you got to put down a lot to win it back. I mean, that's how odds work. But I mean, when Shakur by decision, I feel like it hasn't been that low of a number in a long time. You might not ever see that again, minus 210, because that's a pretty good number for Shakur. If you really believe in Shakur, and there's a lot of people out there that truly believe that this could be a 9-3, 10-2 type of fight for Shakur. With that said, it is time for Chris's categories for Teofimo Lopez versus Shakur Stevenson. We start with power.
Pretty easy one to say, even though we've been talking a lot about the power of Teofimo not being the same 140. It's going to Teofimo. He's got more knockouts. We've seen some highlight reel knockouts at 35. And this is, he's been at 140 for, I think it's his fifth fight or fourth or fifth fight at 140. So even though he doesn't have a lot of knockouts there, or really just the one, he's the puncher in this situation.
Let's go over to speed.
Speed, I'm going to go with Teofimo again. The athleticism, the dynamic, explosiveness, hand speed, foot speed, and his unpredictable change of speed and direction is very impressive for an athletic guy the way that he is. Again, these categories, it's either it or you're not. It could be very, very close, and I do believe that Teofimo holds the edge in speed.
Defense, I think I know where you're going here.
No question. I mean, Shakur is the best defensive fighter in the game today. And we've seen Teofimo get hit, get marked up in fights. And yeah, no question.
Ring IQ.
I'm going to go Shakur Stevenson. I think that's pretty obvious too. But at the same time, I'm not knocking Teofimo's boxing IQ. I think he actually has a high boxing IQ, just not as high as Shakur Stevenson. I think Shakur Stevenson has the highest boxing IQ in the game as well. So in terms of defense and boxing IQ, I think I take Shakur over literally everybody in the game.
All right. So it's the power and speed of Teofimo versus the defense and ring IQ of Shakur. That's pretty much what this fight is all about. I mean, that's what makes this shit real intriguing and why we'll be on the edge of our seat Saturday night, whether we're in the arena or at Jack Doyle's. Time for our predictions for Tio and Shakur. I'll start first. I'm sticking with Shakur by decision. I've been saying that for a while now. Will it be a majority decision, meaning will Shakur, or will there be a draw in there? Will it be a split decision, meaning that Teofimo will get one of the scorecards from the judges? I believe it will be a unanimous decision win for Shakur Stevenson. He handles the pressure of Teofimo early, and then in those middle rounds starts to find his rhythm, and then down the stretch, we see why Shakur is one of the best fighters of all this generation, I should say, not of all time. We got a little carried away there. And I think it will be a better fight than people expected. And I'm the people that expected a lesser fight. I think I'll be wow. Okay, then it was a decently exciting fight, though. So I think Shakur wins a decision.
Yeah, I like both these guys a lot. And we've held their praises on many, many shows for many, many years of both these fighters. They're both super talented, young guys that have the ability to take the mantle of this sport. But it's just a style thing. And for me, I got Shakur as well. I think that the way they match up and the difficulty that I've seen from Teofimo when he has to be the guy who fights off the front foot, especially with guys at higher level, he struggles a bit. And I think it's just going to be really hard for him to force Shakur to engage enough to edge those rounds. Although I do think there's going to be a lot of wiggle room on a lot of these rounds. I think they're going to be super, super close. And I think there's going to be rounds where it's not going to be a ton of punches landed or thrown or landed, I should say. And it's going to come down to I'm going to give it to this guy because of that reason for that. But I do think that Shakur in the long run, because of his ability to manipulate the range and to be cautious, even with an explosive guy like Teofimo, edges and takes enough rounds to get the decision.
That's the interesting part, too, and we haven't talked about it either. It's like I expect a lot of these rounds to be really close.
Really close.
And when they're really close, sometimes it comes down to who's coming forward or who's like bringing the fight, bringing the action. And that should be Teofimo in this fight.
He's also got eye-catching abilities. So when you see him explode with a shot and he cracks your glove and makes a big sound and then like you get the oohs and the ahs and you got him, you know, being what he is, you know, like flying into shots and boom. And, you know, and if Shakur doesn't answer that immediately, you're going to look at that. A judge is going to look at that and be like, that's a Teofimo moment. And if you add up those moments, that's all it takes to win rounds.
All right, I'm changing my pick to Teofimo.
in a close decision. Look at that. I'm the flip-flopper, right?
Okay. I would not be shocked. I would not be that shocked, but I'm sticking with Shakur despite our long-standing
beef. I hate to go against Teofimo. I really do, and he's proved me wrong in the past. I picked him against Lomachenko. I will say that. His dad always says that. He's like, oh, you were the only one who believed in us, but I did not pick him against Taylor, and he proved me hella wrong that night.
Well, that's another thing, too, is he just wins. These fights, he wins. Like these fights where everyone's counting him out. Teofimo finds a way to do it. And if he does,
really
Teofimo gets his hand raised, hell of a win. And the takeover is back on track, back on the train tracks. And that's crazy. Either guy who gets their hand raised, it's going to be an awesome moment for that guy because it's going to solidify them. It's because Shakur's best win, it's Teo's best win. So I can't wait to watch it on Saturday night. Co-main event, Keyshawn Davis fighting for the first time since February of last year against Baranchuk when he won the 135 title.
Because, that was February? Wow.
Yeah, because of the weight when he blew past the weight against Lemos. Lemos.
No, then Lemos blew Baranchuk. The weight against him. And
Yes. He blew the weight in against who was that against?
It was supposed to be De Los Santos, and De Los Santos pulled out.
Right. Then him and his brother. Right.
He looked phenomenal against Baranchuk, made the weight, won the title, and then it was the De Los Santos was his first defense, and he blew the weight, and Lomachenko and De Los Santos walked.
And then we know what happened there. Keyshawn and his brother assault Nahir Albright in his locker room. It's an absolute heinous scene. This dude is out of the ring for months. He leaves 135. He goes up to 140 now. He is back in the public eye. He's doing crazy things. He's saying crazy things. I'm just happy to see him back because I want to see where he can go from here. One of the brightest stars in boxing. Fighting Jermaine Ortiz, who has fought Lomachenko, who has fought Teofimo, fought both of them tough, who has a draw with Joseph Adorno, is a very solid fighter. But does he have enough to fight and hang with one of the most dynamic guys in Keyshawn Davis, who is fighting in a new weight class for the first time?
All things being even, we're just looking at the matchup. No, he doesn't have the answer for Keyshawn Davis. But Keyshawn has been out of the ring for as long as he has been. First time fighting at 140. I believe he has a new team, right? He switched teams.
BOMAC is no longer in his corner.
Right. That's a big caveat as well. Hasn't been active. Hasn't fought in this weight class. Has a new team. Has, you know, spoke candidly about his alcohol abuse, you know, before, you know, in his time off. Has seeming to be acting a little bit crazy and aloof. If you're backing Ortiz, you look at all that and be like, maybe I go for the underdog. But in terms of them matching up skill for skill, tail of the tape, on paper, Keyshawn wins this fight every day.
Yeah, he's a minus 650 favorite. Jermaine Ortiz, you want to sprinkle something on an underdog, is plus 425. Yeah, Davis is doing some crazy interviews and admitted to smoking weed. He got suspended for smoking weed a couple years back. And then he said he blew up in the weight because he was drinking during camp. I mean, these are a lot of admissions, and these are some startling stuff. I know he struggles with mental health, but like you said, Chris, these are all the things you put into the cake, bake into the cake of a professional fighter. It is a very, very mental sport as much as it is physical. Right? Right? I mean, this is a mental sport.
1,000%, you know, and it's one of those things where you fly too close to the sun, you get burnt up. And if that's one of those situations, and listen, if you're a gambling man, that's where you make your money, is when you kind of sense that this has upset written all over it kind of thing. I don't necessarily think that, because we would actually see it in Vegas. Vegas is pretty smart. They have moles everywhere, and they would have a better idea, I think. And we'd see that that wasn't that wide, but that's a pretty wide line.
Yeah, minus 650. It's one of the widest ones on the card. Keyshawn by stoppage. This is an interesting number here. Plus 130. Can Keyshawn do what Lomachenko and Teofimo couldn't? And that's stop Jermaine Ortiz.
Is it a 10 or a 12 rounder?
It's a good question. It should be 12. I hope it's 12. It's 12, yeah.
12 makes it a little different, because then if Keyshawn really gets cooking, Ortiz has to survive, because Ortiz is very good at surviving. We saw that in the Teofimo fight. Like I said, if you really watch that fight, he got clipped with a right hand, completely changed the way he fought the rest of the night. Became less engaging, and it really became Teofimo walking him down, trying to land big shots. So, yeah, I could see a stoppage.
I kind of like that. No, I wish it was a little bigger of a number, plus 130.
Yeah, it's kind of tight. I think I would still stick with decision. I think Ortiz, because it's the new weight class, is another reason. I think that Keyshawn's not that, he wasn't that big at 35. You know, I know he blew that weight, but he doesn't strike me as being a guy who's real big for 40. And Jermaine Ortiz is big, dude. He walks around heavy. I've heard, and he looks big when he's in the ring.
I like Keyshawn by stoppage. Making a bold pick here, late stoppage, not that bold.
Not that
TKO, late stoppage, plus 130 odds there like that. Carlos Adames versus Amo Williams. Adames is a WBC middleweight champion. Hasn't fought since last February when he got a draw versus Shiraz. Many believe that Adames won that fight. Only 31 years old. For some reason, I think of Adames, I think he's like 38 or 39 for some reason. But he's 31 years old. He's still somewhat in his physical prime. Just doesn't get enough fights. The division at middleweight is an absolute mess. Arizona Lara told me that he'll never fight Carlos Adames because they are friends and stablemates, and so we're not going to see unification there. Janibek holds two of the titles at middleweight, and he's awaiting his fate on a failed drug test. Amo Williams is once a really good-looking prospect who got beat up pretty bad by Shiraz and has won three fights since that. The odds are very much in favor of Adames here. I just don't know. Like, I like Adames a lot. Like, maybe he goes to 168. Like, maybe he welcomes someone to 160. I just don't know. I think Adames is going to win. I'm just already looking at what's next as more over like the actual fight. Or do you give Williams much of a shot here to make this competitive?
I like Ammo a lot. I like him personally. I've been around him. He trains on here in Florida. Great guy. I don't give him much of a shot, honestly. I know he's very athletic. He's very, very athletic. He's one of the most athletic guys in the sport. His ability, you know, that he's been able to get as good as he got with very limited, you know, experience before turning pro. Super impressive. And he's got the look, the physique, the athleticism, all of that. But I rate Adames. I have for a long time. I've spoken about him many times on this show. I think Adames is a lot better than people give him credit for. Yeah, he's very, very, very good. And I just think it's a really tough comeback fight into the world stage against a guy like Adames, who, for all intents and purposes, beat Shiraz, and Shiraz beat up Ammo.
Yes, you triangle theory there. -450 for Adames on the money line. Adames stoppage, +120. I like Adames. Probably won't bet on this one, but I like Adames to win. Bruce Shushu Carrington. Finally getting that title shot versus Carlos Castro. This is a WBC featherweight title fight. Carrington, 28, getting that title shot. Castro is coming off of a decision loss to Stephen Fulton all the way back in September of 2024. I thought Castro edged Fulton in that fight. It was on the Canelo Berlanga undercard. That's how long ago Carlos Castro last fought. Yikes on bites.
His last fight was the Fulton fight?
My research is correct here. I'm going, let's see. I believe so. I believe it was all the way back in September of 2024.
It steps right into a title fight. What boxing
right
is
into
amazing.
A title fight.
Boxing
right
is amazing.
It's a vacant title fight. I mean, Carrington
haven't fought in 2 years and you're coming off a loss. It's disputed one of that, but still right into a title fight. Amazing.
It's not like Carrington has been lighting it up either. He's had a bunch of underwhelming performances.
There's ever been somebody who talked himself into a title shot. It is the young Shushu Carrington.
Yes, the ring ambassador. Ring ambassador. They always put that in every tweet. Ring ambassador Bruce Carrington. Love the kid. Great kid. Cuts great promos after fights. He wins this fight, which I think he should. Then he steps into a loaded division that has Angelo Leo, Rafael Espinosa, Nick Ball. Nick Ball's fighting Figueroa next month. And he finally enters the fray there. And Carrington's been asking for big fights. He's been doing every interview possible, is great on the mic, is a damn good fighter. He just has underwhelmed a little bit. But he should be able to blow through, or at least win 8 or 9 rounds against Castro.
Yeah, Shushu wins this fight. He enters the room of world champions. We welcome him in, but he's in a super tough weight class. Good thing about Shushu is he wants all the smoke. He calls out everybody, and I believe that he is willing to sign on the dotted line to fight everybody, especially with the money that's coming around for being a ring ambassador and being on the Riyadh shows, and you can make those fights happen. So that's going to be a hell of a night for Brooklyn.
All right, let's move over. That's the Gerald Miller's also fighting on this card as well.
I spoke to him. I invited him to our party, and he informed me that he was fighting. And I was like, "Oh, my bad." He's like, "Yeah." He's like, I didn't forget. I just like he's like he even said it. He was like, "I really haven't been pushing it out there," but he's fighting Kingsley Ibe, who I've called a few times. These are big boys. These guys are fighting. Kingsley, what's his first name?
Troy Kingsley.
It is Kingsley. Okay,
Kingsley Ibe.
He's fighting Kingsley Ibe. Ibe is a big dude, man. He's actually got some decent fights on his record. I've called him before. So we're gonna have what is our saying? Meaty men throwing
big
heat.
Slappy men slapping meat. Big meaty men slapping heat.
No,
big
that
meaty.
Was not it. That was not it.
What's our saying? Oh, there it is. Big meaty men throwing heat. Big meaty men slapping meat.
No.
I must have seen that somewhere else.
Oh
on the
man, unk status for Dan there. Old
someone
man
posted
Dan.
That recently, like in I think like Queensbury. I want to say someone posted
big
that.
Meaty men throwing meat. Throwing that's going to be that meat. Kind of fight.
Big meaty men slap. Did you invite him to the party because he's a heavyweight and he doesn't have to like? He could just show up, eat a bunch of burgers, and go fight.
No, it's because he's my boy. I've known him for 25 years, and he's probably
fighting around the time it's 6 o'clock. It says on the thing. It could be. It's like right in the middle of our party.
If he wasn't fighting at the, I forgot he was fighting that night. If he wasn't fighting that night, if he was fighting even like the next week, he'd probably still come.
Yeah, and then I would tell him, bro, you're the only guy that's ever hung up on me in the 8 years of Inside Boxing Live.
And
it wasn't deserved.
I was gonna say you might have deserved it. He's very busy. He's a busy guy.
No, it wasn't. Whatever. I just don't understand how he gets these shots.
He came to a pro box show and he put me and Paulie in a headlock while we were on the mic. That man is very strong. Holy shit.
Well, he was doing security for a while and he was like out of boxing. I remember
I would hire
he was like
in an instant.
When Jake Paul grabbed Floyd's hat, remember that? Got your hat, and he ran off with it. Jarrell Miller was like working security. He was in the fray of that, not as like a fighter. He was like pushing bodies around.
Wow.
I think it was during a suspension.
Jarrell never, man. That guy stays busy. He's a hustler, dude. But man, when he grabbed me and Paulie, it came out of nowhere. I had no idea he was going to, and he was just like a bear, literally. They call it a bear hug. Like, dude, he was just like, boom. Gotcha. And I was like, what? I thought I was going to fight for my life. I'm like, what's going on? And then it was like, oh, it's Jarrell.
So maybe I should stop saying that he doesn't deserve these shots because he might put me in a headlock.
You should not say anything negative about him. Especially no. He already hung up on you. He'll twist you like a cat.
He will. That's a good enough reason to show up at the party. He will not be there, though. Let's head over to Puerto Rico. Xander Zayas, Abbas Barão, really good fight. 154-pound unification bout. Both guys, their first title defense. You love that. How often do you see that? Two guys making their first defense in a unification bout. Zayas won the WBO strap over Jorge Garcia Perez in July. Barão won a WBA title in a thriller versus Yoenis Tejas. He got elevated after the fight once Crawford went up to 168 officially. Barão coming off of a great fight over Tejas. Zayas up and coming, one of the youngest champions in boxing. I love this fight. Do I wish it wasn't Saturday night? Yes, I wish it was next week so we can really hunker down on it and sink our teeth into it. This is going to be a great fight. It's the footwork of Zayas, and Barão is going to apply a lot of pressure, very sturdy. Love it. I really like it.
I agree. I really like this fight as well, you know, not just because Xander is my guy from down here in South Florida, my Puerto Rican compadre, but he's such a good kid. He has all the potential to be an absolute superstar, and he can really fight, man. He's super talented, long, athletic, boxer puncher, great gas tank, super disciplined, very, very smart in the way that he chooses his punches. Fast hands, good feet, great body puncher, you name it. This fight is going to answer all the questions we need to know about Xander Zayas, because on paper, dude, I look at this fight on paper, I'm like, Xander runs away with it. 10-2, easy fight. On paper. But this fight's really about intangibles, because that's everything that Barão brings to this game. He will break you if you have a crack. He doesn't bend you, he breaks you. And he has the chin, he's got the heart, he has the self-belief, he's got the metal, he's got the character, you name it, this guy has it. All those intangibles that we don't have meters for, we don't have bars on the video games for, this guy's got it. And he's going to test you. But in terms of their stature, the way they fight stylistically, Barão is kind of a high guard guy who looks to respond. But you got a guy with long arms who can move like Xander. That's why I say on paper, Xander runs away with this thing. But if Barão can make this a dogfight, if Barão can punch through the jab of Xander Zayas, we got a real shootout here.
Yeah, I was on the call for Barão versus Tejas, and I was so impressed with Barão's composure and his like willingness to win. Because he was not supposed to win that fight. I mean, the odds were against him. I mean, it was all about Tejas and having that guy get this shot right here against Zayas. It probably would have been Tejas versus Zayas. But Barão is just so solid. And like, you're right, the intangibles, like the things you cannot measure is what makes him special. But when it comes to Zayas and just the X's and O's here, there's going to be moments where Barão is going to have Zayas pinned, and there's going to be moments where Zayas is going to have to really show why he's a champion and if he really is the goods at 154. But it comes down to footwork too, I believe, too, with Zayas. Like, he's got some of the best feet at 154. He's got some of the best feet in boxing. I mean, he's 23 years old. He better have good fresh legs. He's going to need those legs. He's going to need him in this fight, because I do believe there's going to be moments.
And he also said he's not going to have a girlfriend until after his, you know, he's world champion and his boxing career is well along into. Oh. So, you know, he's got legs. He's got them legs.
Well, yeah, that's a good note. I mean, I wasn't thinking. He's a good looking guy. So, I mean, I'm sure he's got a lot of girls in his DMs. He's going to answer that. So, would you say after he becomes a champion? He already is a champ.
I don't know if they said it was until he got a championship or whatever, but like, it just shows you, I'm just talking about the level of discipline that this young man has. And because listen, I've been in the gym with him. I've sparred with him. I've been in the gym with him many, many times. I've seen how he operates. He has discipline of the highest order.
Yes, and he's been in the public eye since he was a teenager. I mean, mm-hmm. he was like a prodigy. He was like one of the youngest fighters ever signed to Top Rank. It's like LeBron James, Bryce Harper on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and they went on to become great superstars. I mean, Zayas is fulfilled that by becoming a world champion. Now he can solidify it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I do believe it comes. There's going to be moments in this fight. I do think Zayas will win because I just think he's got the better boxing skills, fresher, better legs, better jab, better movement. But I'm telling you, there's going to be moments in this fight where he's going to really be pushed and we're going to really see what he's made of. Really good fight. You can watch it on Top Rank Fast Channels. We're going to try to get it at the bar. If they have a smart TV, we'll get it on there. It's a Top Rank fight. Christina Poncher is on the call. Our friend, so that should be fun. Over,
I was supposed to be on the call, but I chose to be with you, Dan.
That's a mistake.
Chose to be with our fan, with our listeners and our fans,
our brethren.
You know, I got Pro Box the night before. We got this. I got my dad's birthday on Sunday, so I had to.
It's a great weekend. It's maybe 1 degree in New York, high of 10.
I've been in a bad mood for days thinking about it. Packing has been an absolute nightmare.
Yeah,
my coat's bigger than my seat and my plane.
You want to pack boots because I'm watching a lot of videos out of New York City where the streets are fine. The sidewalks are a mess. I'm seeing a lot of that.
I texted Dan yesterday. I'm like, how does New York City look? Is it a mess? Do I need like, and he's like, oh, it's terrible. I'm like, do I need boots? He goes, oh yeah.
Bro, there's like 5-foot piles of snow that are going to be here for months.
I might have to carry my Jordans into the party because I don't want them hitting the street.
Yeah, you might have to do that. I'm serious. It's going to be treacherous, but we're all coming out. We're all going to be there. No excuses. We're going to see you all on Saturday night, Jack Doyle's. We have one more fight to break down. Bakram Murtazalayev, Josh Kelly. Woo! And another banger at 154. This is Saturday afternoon from the UK. Murtazalayev is the champion. Hasn't fought in 470 days. 470
crime.
Days.
That is
when
a
he
crime.
Stopped Tim Tszyu. He's 5'11 with a 47-inch reach. He's scary 47? Looking.
No. What?
74. Oh my God. I just came dyslexic.
Dyslexia.
For a second. He's a 5'11 man with T-Rex arms. He's got 47-inch reach. He's going to go in there and he's going to.
Yeah, if Rocky Marciano's got an extended reach on you, you got some really short arms. 47.
He's got 17 stoppages and 23 fights. He's scary looking. He throws 86 punches around. He lands close to 40% of his power. He looks scary. They had an unbelievable stare down. It looked like it was a scene out of 8 Mile. Like it was in, apparently it was in Josh Kelly's gym. It was one of the best stare downs I've ever seen. And it got me even more excited for this fight.
Murtazalayev is an absolute beast. He is the dark horse of 54.
We'll see. I mean, he's the boogeyman. This guy is the boogeyman in boxing because we just don't know enough about him. He looks scary. Yeah. He destroyed Tim Tszyu. He hasn't gotten a fight, so like people are avoiding him, mostly because he just doesn't bring a lot of money, and he's also IBF champion with a ridiculous rehydration clauses. I was watching a lot of Kelly yesterday. I pulled up some fights of his. You know, rhythm fighter. This is what I wrote down. Rhythm fighter, relies on movement, in and out with his jab, occasional right hand, only throws 34 punches around.
Wow.
In his loss to Avanesian, he abandoned the game plan. And was in a firefight midway through the fight, which you do not want to be for Josh Kelly. Like, you don't want to be in firefights. If he's in a firefight with Murtazalayev, he's going to get sparked out, I think. I see a lot of people like, oh, sexy pick is Josh Kelly. I just don't see it. He has to depend on Murtazalayev having a horrible weight cut and extreme ring rust. Because Murtazalayev should win this fight. But Kelly, I think, will be in it for the first 4 or 5 rounds because of his speed and athleticism.
The argument for Kelly is that, you know, because, all right, so we go back to Kelly, right? He's always been a really good-looking, you know, prospect on the way up. Good athletic style, very fun to watch. Decent puncher, got a little pop, but it looks good when he does it. But then he struggled mightily against Ray Robinson. He actually fought on the same card as me when I fought Tommy Coyle for the WBO title eliminator the night that Andy Ruiz upset Anthony Joshua. Struggled mightily, got a draw, lucky to get a draw on most people's scorecards. Then he gets destroyed by Avanesian, just broken. Not, I shouldn't say destroyed. He got broken in that fight. And that's a hard thing for people to forget.
Got a big cut over the back of his head.
Yep. But that was at 147. And he did struggle to make weight. So if you're a backer of Kelly, you're saying, listen, he's a new guy at 54. He's had a lot of really good wins at 54. He's looked good in his last run, beating some quality guys. Not really world-class guys, but guys with good records, guys that are tough, and look good doing it. So if you're a backer of Kelly, you're going, listen, at 54, he's a different guy. You know, if you're cutting weight really bad and you're in a really rough and tough fight, you know, it's hard to stay in it. You know, that can break your will on its own. So if you're backing him, you're going on that. And again, the athleticism, the hard to hit, the difficult target, the fact that he, you know, punches some weird angles, maybe, you know, Murtaza Aliyev, who is really technical and by the book, you catch a guy like that, right? That's where the argument is. Me, I'm with you. I don't really see it. I actually think Murtaza Aliyev is deserved of his dark horse status because I can't look past the Jack Colquay fight. And I know I've told this story on this podcast before. It was a pro box show. I'm out in Tampa somewhere. And the night before, I'm at a restaurant and I look up and above the bar, they have a fight on. And what do you do when you're a boxing fan? You see a fight. It doesn't matter what fight it is. You're
glued to it. Is this a mistake?
Oh, boom. And I look up and it's round two of Murtaza Aliyev versus Jack Colquay. And I'm like, oh, man, this is so crazy. Like, this guy's fighting Tim Zhu in like 2 weeks. I really haven't seen much on him. Within two rounds, I'm texting Paulie and I'm like, yo, and I sent him a picture, a screenshot of the screen. I'm like, yo, Murtaza Aliyev is an absolute nightmare. I'm like, Tim Zhu might be in big trouble. And he goes, yeah? And I'm like, yeah, this style's tough. And then a week later, Tim Zhu is getting peeled off the canvas and Murtaza Aliyev is the man. So yeah, I don't just look at the Tim Zhu fight. I've seen this guy and Jack Colquay is tough. He's a tough out for everybody. And, he showed some things in that fight and it was rounds. And I think he even said it was during a fast because of his religion. So that wasn't his best performance. He looked pretty damn good to me. So yeah, I think this guy is as good as everybody thinks.
I think he's really good. Murtaza Aliyev, obviously, Kelly is going to be in the fight in the first half because mm-hmm. I just think he's a very, very, very good athlete. He's got great flashy movement. And Murtaza Aliyev hasn't fought in 470 days. Still got to make 154 pounds as a really big guy. You have the hydration clause in there as well. I'm looking at the odds here, and I can't believe how – I thought Murtaza Aliyev would be a way bigger favorite. He's minus 330. Josh Kelly plus 245. I already have a bet in on Murtaza Aliyev by decision at plus 350. What do you think of that?
When did you put that in?
Just last night. I got excited.
Wow.
Because I watched a bunch of Kelly's fights and I said, you know what? He might win a couple of those early rounds and he might find himself somewhat in the fight around the fifth or sixth round. And I'm kind of banking on Murtaza Aliyev being having a little bit of ring rust and also just maybe a tough weight cut. And I think Kelly is tough. Like, I've seen him stop before. Obviously, he got stopped by Evanesian. That's it. The only time he's ever been stopped. Very tough guy. Decision. Murtaza Aliyev, decision. Take a look at that, everybody. Plus 350.
Okay.
It's enough to sprinkle on. I put like $50 on it. You could buy some drinks at the bar.
You can with that win, you might be able to buy the whole party.
Not that much.
I don't think he gets to the end, honestly. I think he's
gonna win by KO.
Yeah, I think Murtaza Aliyev stops him. And it's knock on Kelly. I like Kelly, but I don't know. I really didn't like what I saw in the Avanesian fight. Murtaza Aliyev, I think he is that dude, man. He's a bad, bad man. Hey, listen, I could be wrong. Maybe. And that's another thing about this fight, which why it's so intriguing, because there's a lot of question marks against Murtaza Aliyev, because you see him destroy Zhu, and you're like, but then you see Zhu get destroyed by Fandora the next fight, and you're like, maybe Zhu was never really that guy.
Well,
so, like,
Zhu
that was
fought a horrible fight against Murtaza Aliyev.
Of course. And he fought a horrible fight against Fandora too, but in the second time around. So you get the idea, it's like, maybe Zhu just isn't that guy, and maybe, you know, he just underestimated him. But then I go back to the Jack Colquay fight. This guy, you know, you mentioned him being avoided, you know, since what he did recently. He was avoided before that. He took a lot of step aside money over the years, you know, being the number one contender for a really long time. And because he is dangerous. He's a big 54 pounder who can punch, but also he just has no profile. And so again, he's one of those guys. If he doesn't have a title, nobody fights him. And if he loses this fight, we're never seeing him again. So
yeah,
there's a lot of line.
I think Kelly is going to be inspired too. He's fighting at home, athleticism. Going to hang around those first couple rounds.
12 rounds is a long time.
It's a really long time. But the thing with Kelly too, I was watching his fights, is that like he gets himself in trouble is when he abandons the game plan. I don't know if it's fatigue. I don't know if it's just him being, I want to brawl. Middle of the fight, he finds himself in brawls. He was in that Troy Williamson fight. He found him. He was in a brawl when he shouldn't have been. Evanesian, he was winning those first couple rounds, and then he gets rid of. He abandons the jab. He's fighting in close with Evanesian, who that's his bread and butter. If he does that against Murtaza Aliyev, then he's probably going to stop him. If he sticks to his guns and sticks to the jab and movement, he might survive. I don't think he'll win because I just don't think he has enough power too to keep Murtaza Aliyev off of him. Should be a good one. That's the first fight of the night. That's in the afternoon. So I believe they're going to be happy or pretty upset with my bet by the time we get to the party. Good thing there'll be alcohol at the Jack Doyle's. Last question I have for you, Chris. Who's going to steal the show on Saturday night? It's a long day of boxing. We got Teofimo. We have Shakur. We have Keyshawn Davis. We have Carrington. We have Zayas. We have Murtaza Aliyev. We have Abbas Barrow as an underdog. Who will steal the show on Saturday night?
Steal the show in terms of who's like the biggest surprise, who's the best fight,
who's the guy on Sunday morning we're like, bam, this is what we got to talk about?
Shakur Stevenson. I think that I'm hoping that they put on an epic fight, the two of them. And, you know, I hope we're talking about both. But I think Shakur, if he gets the win over Teofimo, especially a spirited Teofimo Lopez, if he is to get the win, I think he's the guy we're talking about. And if not Shakur, then I think Xander Zayas, man. I think it's going to be, there's going to be an unspoken anointing of him being the Puerto Rican star. And I think that's a big deal for our sport because he's just got an old island behind him. He's got everything that you need except for the punch. He doesn't have the island punch. He doesn't have the Trinidad punch. He doesn't have the Trinidad Dakota punch. But he's got everything else. He's got the smile. He's bilingual. He actually speaks Spanish, which is important for the island. He has the look and he's getting good wins and we're seeing him. So I think he is going to be the uncrowned Puerto Rican prince if he is to win. So I got him as number two.
If Murtaza Aliyev sparks out Kelly, that's just going to add to his allure.
His lore, aura. Yeah. Not allure. Allure, yeah.
And if Zayas wins, which I think he should, we have some more clarity at 154. There's rumors out there that Boots could be fighting the winner of Murtaza Aliyev Kelly. Apparently, Kelly already signed on to fight Boots, which is an insane thing to do when you have staring down Bakram Murtaza Aliyev.
They really think he's going to win. I think it's
more of a matchroom thing. I think that's kind of a negotiation ploy. I think Eddie's
that's
like,
such an easy fight to make.
Yeah, I think that's an Eddie move. Like, hey, we have a backup plan. Like, you know, Kelly could fight Boots if he wins. If he wins, yes, Josh Kelly is. That's one.
But if
of
he
the
doesn't win, we're not going to set up. We're not going to make Ennis Murtaza Aliyev.
I don't know. That's up to Ennis.
Why can't we go for that?
We'll see how.
Why wouldn't it be Boots is going to fight the winner? Why wouldn't we just make that?
Yeah. I don't know why. I don't know why is anything happening.
I'm asking a rhetorical, stupid question because
why is Tyson Fury fighting on Netflix and not DAZN? Why do people have the DAZN Ultimate plan when some of the biggest fights are going to be on Netflix?
I am not going to gripe on that because I'm happy for the fight. I'll put it that way because I got Netflix anyway, right? I got DAZN anyway. I'm not really signed on to DAZN so I could see the 3-year comeback of Tyson Fury whatever his 15th comeback. But I think it's cool that that Netflix is moving in the direction of actually putting on real fights. So Jake Paul did an amazing thing, amazing service to boxing by getting us to Netflix, right? We've got us to Netflix. Yeah, you did these fights that were not real boxing, but you've brought real boxing to Netflix. And I'm not just saying this fight. I'm saying the undercards. You brought really good undercards. You got Amanda Serrano and Katie Taylor to one of those fights. You fought Anthony Joshua, which yikes. But then now Netflix looks at this next fight and goes, well, Jake's out for a while, but we're in on boxing. What's the next biggest thing we can make? They probably thought it was going to be Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury. Anthony Joshua obviously needs some time. It doesn't matter. We're all in for boxing. We're going to keep the slot for boxing. Let's get the next biggest thing we can. Next biggest thing, which is a very big thing, is Tyson Fury's comeback. And who do you have him fight? he's not the best guy in the world, but I think he's a really good comeback fight. And he looks the damn part. He looks like a bad villain from a movie. So yeah. It's going to grab casuals. I think it's a really smart move. This fight's great.
I love it. Tyson Fury making his comeback on Netflix is huge for a number of reasons. Huge. He's fighting Makhmudov, who looks like a real-life Frankenstein. But Fury has done documentaries. He's been on a part of Netflix. It's interesting because it's interesting because Netflix obviously likes the spectacles, the Jake Paul fights and all that. They got into Canelo and Crawford, which was a legitimate fight, and it did big numbers. This is like the first non-spectacle, non-big fight that leads me to believe that Netflix might be invested in boxing, because I do believe that Netflix wants AJ and Fury. I do believe that will happen later this year. I think they looked at it. All right, we'll put Fury on Netflix in this tune-up fight, get people excited about it. Grandiose, it's Tyson Fury, with the agreement that it's going to be another big fight at the end of the year, and it's probably going to be Anthony Joshua. But I'm not about to complain that boxing is on Netflix. This is a great thing. But we need more. This is how boxing gets a resurgence. This is how boxing gets in front of eyeballs, is when it's easy accessible. And I'm just curious about how these fights, where they get made, how they go from DAZN to Netflix as a boxing nerd. It's like you have Turkey, who's invested in DAZN, has a stake in it. And this is a ring card. And for the most part, ring cards have been on DAZN. But now this one goes to Netflix. I'm done. I just don't know. I don't know how to forecast the sport anymore and the business side of things, but whatever. We're going to see Tyson Fury on Netflix and potentially see Tyson Fury versus Joshua on Netflix at the end of the year, because Hearn did an interview with Ariel Helwani, and Hearn said, I believe that AJ will fight on. And that's all I had to hear. He wouldn't have said that if he didn't think so, or Joshua didn't tell him. All in all, good thing. Good thing. Big boxing weekend. Netflix.
Good things.
Party. Party in the city where the heat is on. It's going to be 1 degree in New York City. The heat will be on in Jack Doyle's restaurant and bar. Buy your tickets now. $20 if you buy now. $25 at the door. Get you one free drink. And you'll be able to watch the fight if you don't have tickets to the fight, which is a great deal.
Yes, it's a fantastic deal, especially in 2026. One of the reasons I was inviting Jarrell Miller, because I want him to carry me to the party, so I didn't have to have my Jays in the sand in the
that
salt.
Would be wild.
How funny would that be? Guys, definitely come out. Make sure you buy your tickets in advance, save a little bit of money, let us know how many people are coming so we can be prepared. It's gonna be a great night of fights, and you and I actually have access to the fight, but we're choosing not to go. We're gonna hang out with you guys instead. We're gonna stay in the warmth. We don't want to go outside, and we're gonna watch the fight with all of you awesome listeners.
Yes, should be a great time. Next time we see each other, we will be at Jack Doyle's restaurant and bar. Buy your tickets now. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. We'll see you in New York City.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.